Hey everybody, welcome back to the Sixer Sense podcast. Chris, we talked about it for a month. It's finally happened. You know, obviously we didn't actually do this, but I'm going to take credit for it. You know what? I'm going to take credit for it. We take credit for this. Okay, we take credit for this. LeBron James is a member of the Philadelphia 76ers. We said it was the best fit. He thinks so too. Obviously, we're basketball geniuses. But in all seriousness, LeBron James is now an official member of the Philadelphia 76ers, announcing that he was agreeing to a two-year deal worth $8 million with a second year as a player option. Chris, when I saw it on my phone, I was writing something else for somebody else, for Uriah. And when I checked my phone and I saw it, I jumped out of my chair and jumped for joy in my house, so much so that my 7-year-old daughter, who was on her headphones, saw me jumping for joy, did not realize what I was jumping for joy for, but came over and jumped with me and wanted me to pick her up and like jump with her. So that's what we did. Because like LeBron James is a member of the Philadelphia 76ers. Chris, thoughts?
Yeah, Lucas, it still doesn't feel real. It's kind of insane that this offseason has happened the way it has.
So what were you, like two or three when LeBron came into league?
I guess I was 4, maybe.
Oof. Thanks for making me feel old.
Yeah.
I was 11.
Look, this is like one of the biggest things that has ever happened to the Sixers. I have not
promised. This is the best team that we have ever fielded, period.
Well, let's talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah, I was getting ready to move some furniture around my apartment when I got the notification. So I got to rub it in my brother's face a bit. He's a Hawks fan who's given me plenty of crap over the years.
Look, the Hawks look good this year, but not as good as us.
Hawks would be good. There's a lot of good teams in the East, which we can also talk about. But I still haven't really processed the Jaylen Brown trade. So there's a lot in my head.
Let me ask you, because you gave the Jaylen Brown trade like a BB-, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Does adding LeBron to this change your opinion about the Jaylen Brown trade?
I mean, it certainly makes me feel better about things. Not that I didn't feel good. Obviously, I was very happy with that trade on overall. Like, a B is not a negative grade. I'm pretty stoked. This is awesome. I'm super, super thrilled.
I can't believe he did this.
I think he deserves a lot of credit for putting himself in this environment. We know that Philly fans are not the most forgiving bunch. So he's not going to, it's not necessarily an easy landing if the Sixers don't pull it off this year or next year. Like, he's going to be asked to show up and actually perform.
Yeah.
Be held to a certain standard by this fan base in a way that really, I don't know if any other fan base in the NBA is quite like this one. So he's like, he's buying into the pressure on a great team that has some flaws and some concerns that we can talk through. Like, it's not a guaranteed championship. So
it's not guaranteed, but.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about the but. But I'll read out part of his decision message that he posted on X. He said,
yes,
quote, "This is my last decision. I'm not going for money. I'm not going for family. What am I really playing for at this point? I still want to sacrifice. I still want to work. I still want to grind. I still want to compete, to win, and to have a chance at the feeling of winning. I believe I can make the Philadelphia 76ers a championship team, and I am so excited to energize a new fan base and start this incredible journey one last time." Now, it's really interesting to be adding LeBron to a team and a fan base that has really spent the last decade in like a deep depression for the most part. This is one of the most like aggrieved, and we've just been so through much,
so much
with this team, Lucas.
Yeah, I do want to know something.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you checked on the team's official website and the NBA store, but basically most, if not all, LeBron James jerseys are already sold out.
Yeah.
And not just his, but other players on the team, their jerseys are selling a lot faster now too.
Yeah, they got those up super quick.
Just because they're up to order does not mean that you'll get them within like 7 to 14 business days.
No, yeah,
The Jaylen Brown jersey I ordered today won't be here until like September 2nd. So yeah, like,
well, I mean, I was more like they sold the jerseys out before the official Twitter account even acknowledged that LeBron had signed. I still don't know.
I mean, look, you got to make that bank. I mean, look, it's LeBron James. You know how many more fans we got today just because of that?
It's crazy. It's going to be such a weird experience, like dealing with the LeBron of it all over the next 1 to 2 years.
We can talk about it. Is it going to be 1 or 2 years? Let's talk about that. I mean, we'll get to it, I guess.
No, I mean, we can start there.
Yeah.
I personally think it probably depends on what happens this year.
It might.
If they win, he's going to retire. If they get close, he's coming back. If they're like a first, second round exit again, I don't really know how things will go from there. What are your feelings?
You know, a lot of like, you know, the Brian Windhorses of the world have been saying like, oh, he wants to get to 25. And I tend to agree with that. I think even if he wins this year, which is going to be very hard for the Sixers to do, let's be clear. But if they do win this year, I still think he comes back for 25. Because how many players can say in NBA history that they played for a quarter century? He's going to be the only one.
He's the only one who's going to play for 24. So,
well, I mean, but 25 is a different number, and you know it. So, like, obviously,
oh, yeah,
you know what I mean, though.
No, I could see it for sure. I obviously would love to have him for 2 more years. I think this is my final decision part of that statement is
it's very true.
Notable.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that, like, if we get to the end of the year and the Sixers are bounced early and it doesn't really fit, could we end up with LeBron backtracking on that? Maybe, but it's not really something I'm going to concern myself with right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's likely. I think he's here. He's here to stay.
I sure hope so. And like I said, just massive respect for even trying to do this because it's a different kind of environment in Philly and a different kind of pressure than you would have faced in Cleveland or Miami or even Golden State. There wouldn't have been any real championship expectations in Golden State. Cleveland and Miami, it's kind of a nice swan song. He's like jumping into the fire. Here in Philly,
he wants the smoke. He wants all the smoke. He still needs to go. Which is the podcast he should still go on besides ours, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right, Lucas. You kind of already tipped your hand on this one, but I was going to ask: is this the best team of the Joel Embiid era? You just said it's the best team in Sixers history.
Yeah, it's the best team.
Expand on your thoughts there.
Okay, like. Let's just talk about it here for a second. You have two, and you know what? StatMuse tweeted it out, but I don't have all the things in front of me. But I think this starting five has 36 All-Stars, 29 All-NBA selections, 5 MVPs, and I believe 5 Finals MVPs. I mean, look, like, if you just put that together, like, look, you could say, oh, what about the Ben and Jimmy teams with Joel? Okay. Is Jimmy Butler at that point better than LeBron, like Jaylen Brown or LeBron James right now? No, Joel Embiid. I think Joel, that's a wash. I'm going to say that's a wash. VJ's definitely better than JJ. Tyrese is better than Ben. Like, it's just better, dude. It's just better. It's better. I'm sorry. Respectfully, of course.
No, I mean, I tend to agree. We can talk about the depth concerns, which are still present, but, you know, we've never had a super deep team in the Embiid era. Outside of maybe the Marco and Ersan year. This is by far the best I felt about Philly going into the season ever. Mm-hmm. The best I felt about their chances to win a championship since Jimmy Butler was leading them into that series with Joel. So,
I think this team has the right mentality too. I mean, Jaylen Brown's going to be the wild card here, but like LeBron's in a place that he's probably willing to sacrifice. Joel, often injured, probably willing to sacrifice his game if it means winning a championship. He did it with LeBron as an Olympian, right? Maxie, one of the most unselfish dudes we know. Like, he doesn't care about taking a backseat. VJ seems to be from the same vein of Tyrese. Granted, we've only had 1 year, but we can assume that he's willing to do what it takes. Jaylen Brown's going to be the wild card here. I don't think LeBron wants to average 20-plus points at 42 years old. I think he's okay if he's not averaging that much, right? Like, we can agree on that. Like,
yeah. And so we're going to go through all of this point by point. Yeah. So I don't want to get too deep into it yet.
Yeah.
On paper, this is an awesome, awesome team. I think it's notable from the reporting from Shams and ESPN and everyone that Brown, Joel, and Maxie were all very committed to this recruitment effort. They were all in constant conversation with LeBron over the past month. Nick Nurse was the only coach he talked to throughout this
process, important.
According to Shams, which credit to Nick Nurse, who we have never
seen. Happy birthday, Nick Nurse.
Happy
birthday. It's Nick Nurse's birthday today.
Happy birthday. Awesome birthday gift for him.
Right.
The fit stuff is all interesting. There will be some sacrifice needed on everyone's part. All five of these starters are going to have to sacrifice on some level. I do think the fact that Jaylen was active in this recruitment effort and wanted is LeBron important. Here is notable. And I know the whole conversation around him in Boston, we can start with him, like, was that he wasn't happy being second banana to Tatum and he wanted his own team. And there's already these conversations with him going to Philly, like, how is he going to handle sharing the floor with Maxie and Embiid? That's still a lot of mouths to feed on its own. And VJ is coming up. Now you add LeBron into the mix. I don't know if it was strictly like him wanting to be quote unquote the guy.
I don't think that
was part of his thinking, but
he's too smart for that. I think it's a respect thing. I don't think they respected him as like one of the best players in the league. That's my feeling. I'm not reporting anything. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying from the outside looking in, I would suspect based off of what we know is him as a person is the lack of respect that he gets for how good he is. And he probably felt that within the organization.
No, that's pretty much exactly what I was going to say. I think it was respecting. I think he felt that Boston did not put him on the same like pedestal that they did Tatum. And like whether or not that's fair is another topic, but clearly he did not feel totally. He also never actually requested a trade out of Boston.
Yes.
It's not like he forced his way out. That was ultimately the Celtics' decision to pull the plug. So I'm really not super worried about this as far as like Jaylen Brown not being willing to share the floor and to sacrifice in certain areas. Whether or not he can do that successfully, I think, is the main question. So how do you see Jaylen's kind of role shaping up on this team, Lucas?
Well, I mean, he has to go back to what he did really good early on in his career, because he was a good defender early on in his career. The numbers show that, right? Like, we got to go back. He's going to have to be with VJ, one of the two wing stoppers, right? So that's number one, right? He's going to have to do a lot more off-ball movement, right? Like, I think we can agree on that. Like, what type of role is he going to be, number one, number two? I think, and we kind of talked about this on the phone earlier today, I think with this team, you don't have to have a set pecking order. I think it depends on matchup. But, like, you know, or, like, you know, just find the open man. Like, but if I had to say, like, who's going to average the most points this season, I'd say it's probably Brown. Now, I'm not saying that because he's the best player or the most efficient scorer. I think that, one, you know, there is a, you know, we just talked about it. Brown felt disrespected. You want to make sure he's respected. But Brown's also a smart enough guy. I think that he will be either number one or number two or scoring on this team the next season. Number one or number two. Whichever one that is, I don't care. I don't think he cares either. I think he'll be like somewhere between 23 and 25 points per game.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think I tend to agree. I think Brown and Maxie are going to be the two guys kind of quote-unquote leading the charge on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
there's still going to be nights where Embiid does his thing. There are going to be nights where LeBron does his thing. There are going to be nights when VJ pops off. Mm-hmm. But I think those are your two, like, durable, younger, in their prime stars who can really
carry the load.
Carry the load, yeah. So, yeah, he will have to sacrifice. I think the defense is the big concern with this team. I have no doubt, like, offensively, this is going to be the best offensive team in the NBA. If everyone's healthy, like, they're going to be pretty much impossible to guard. Defensively, we know that Joel took a bit of a step back last year. He wasn't a bad defender, but he's not, like, the all-world. He's not, like, closing off the paint like he did in his prime.
Well, let's talk about Joel. Yeah.
Well, so Joel has taken a step back. LeBron was not a very good defender last year in LA. He's coasting through the regular season a lot.
He's 42 years old.
That's not going to change. Brown can be a very good on-ball defender. He tends to fall asleep off the ball. Maxey's kind of in a similar boat. VJ's the only real plus-plus defender in this group, and he's a 6'3", 6'4" guard. So. That's going to be the question, is can they guard? Because really in the second unit, aside from Dean Wade, they don't have a ton of guys who can go out and get either. So
Barlow can, but the question is, are they going to play Barlow? I don't know. That's going to be a real question, right?
Yeah, Barlow's solid, but like Wade's the only like...
Unless Justin Edwards takes a big leap defensively this year, which he has the tools to. The question is, will he? I don't know. Filon was a good defender in college, but he's also just kind of too small for not just height-wise. I'm talking about, like, weight-wise. That makes me not think that he's going to struggle, at least his first year as a defender. So, I mean, I don't think that the Sixers are done. I don't think you think the Sixers are done. By the way, former Sixers center Dwight Howard was just like, Philly, you know what to do on social media. Dwight, respectfully, I think you're a Hall of Famer now. If you have, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
I mean, look, I think the Sixers are pretty much done for the offseason. They're not going to add.
No. I'm not saying I did see a rumor. This is a rumor that KCP will be bought out soon. I don't think that makes. I mean, it makes sense, but I'm good.
Yeah, I mean that's like a fine vet men guy, but I don't think that moves the needle a ton.
Defensively he's still pretty good. He just can't shoot threes like he used to, but
I'd be okay with that. I'm open to that, but
I think we're gonna make more moves at the trade deadline.
I think that's right. They're gonna see how this roster plays out for half a season and proceed accordingly. I think that's where we're at now.
Go ahead.
Mike Gansey has clearly proven that he's willing to be aggressive and he's going to go out and make moves when he can.
Mm-hmm. And now you have no reason not to go into the second apron. You have no reason not to.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are still like financial limitations from that could impact.
Are we hard capped at the first apron because of the Jaylen Brown trade or are we? Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah. Yeah, even beyond the second apron, like he's going to be willing to put some picks on the line. But yeah, defensively is going to be the big question with this team. I think offensively, I have zero concerns. There's been a lot of talk about how everyone fits, and those are valid conversations. But like, they're going to figure it out on some level. It's just going to be hard to guard all these guys at once. You're going to be able to stagger multiple stars at a time. They're going to be fine on offense. It's whether or not they can guard at the level necessary to make it through the playoffs against teams like New York.
I think during the regular season, we can agree Tyrese was an average defender at the point guard position now. I would say average, maybe even slightly above. I guess the real question is, like, Gansey has proven to make a lot of good moves this year. Now, me and you both did not love the Hot Purta thing. I hated it more than you did. But let's just say Hot Purta does figure out how to play without fouling. That gives you a really good rim defender then. That gives you somebody that can close off the paint, right? Because he's a 7-footer. He can rebound. He can finish. If he's figured out how... Look, and maybe you foul more when you don't get that much minutes. I'm not sure. I haven't seen him enough to accurately say that. But I do want to note that the Sixers do have three partially guaranteed contracts. You have Dalen Terry, you got Jabari Walker, and then you have Adem Bona. So you could still make moves if you wanted to this offseason, if you wanted
to. Yeah, I think they already have to waive one of those guys for this deal to go through. So I'm assuming Dalen Terry's out, if I had to guess.
Wait, so why? Because they still had one open roster spot prior to this move.
I think it's a financial thing. I don't have the article in front of me, but...
Okay.
I assume Dalen Terry is not going to be on this team, if I had to guess.
That's fine. That's fine.
They're not going to waive Bona. Bona, like Hook Porty, is a very good rim protector, very talented athlete, but just needs to figure out how to be smarter on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. How do we feel about, I've had a lot of my Sixers fans ask me, how do we feel about Jahni Broome after Summer League? Got to see it.
He's the fourth center on this team. Like,
yeah. I mean, look, you can play, and here's the other thing. You can play Barlow at center if you want to get spicy. You can play LeBron at center if you want to get spicy. He did it against the Houston Rockets, and it worked somehow, So, clearly you have options.
Yeah, I don't think Broome is going to be a big factor on this team.
Probably not.
Willing to be proven wrong, would love to be proven wrong, but... I do not see that happening. Lucas.
Yeah.
I think another big talking point has been how this maybe impacts VJ's development. He's, was the number three pick a year ago. Now he's going to have an even smaller slice of the cake. He's going to be the pretty clear fifth option on a very talented team.
Fourth or fifth. Yeah.
How do you see VJ's development kind of shaping up here?
Well... You could look at it one or two ways. You can say, oh gosh, VJ's not going to get the ball. He's not going to develop. Or you can look at it, and this is the way that I'm looking at it. One, learning how to be a role player, which will help him towards the end of his career. Two, you can learn from one of the best who's ever done it, and LeBron James, whose teammate was Dwayne Wade, who, honestly, you're built and your games are kind of similar in a lot of ways. Not exactly the same, but similar. You can pick LeBron's head about that. And look, LeBron's only going to be here for 2 years. Do we honestly think that VJ is going to be ruined within 2 years? Probably not. I just think it's going to take longer for his coming out party. That's I don't see this as a negative. I see this as a watch and learn. Learn to do different things. And look, I expect VJ to average, if I had to guess, somewhere between 16 to 18 points a game next year, somewhere around there on high efficiency, because guess what? He's going to be getting the worst defender every single night. Chris, he's going to get the worst defender on every team every single night. That means when we play Washington, he's going to get Trae Young. And like I said, if this team plays, agenda-free basketball, there are going to be nights where he cooks. And it might be more often than we think, because he's going to have most of the other opposing team's worst defenders. So
I don't disagree. Yeah. I think it's going to depend on the matchup of the night. I definitely still think there will be big VJ nights here and there. And I tend to agree as far as his development. I'm not concerned. I think VJ really is still pretty rough around the edges when he tries to.
Do too much.
Be the guy. He's not a great finisher yet. He's not a great shooter. I think playing a smaller role and really focusing on defense is a role that he can thrive in. So I'm not worried about that either. I agree that in a year or two when LeBron leaves, he can step right back up. He's a very hard worker. I don't see this derailing him in any way. I think I understand being he's just not going to take the standard year two scoring leap that maybe we would expect from a super high draft pick. But
yeah,
that's just not really the focus on this team. Yeah. And I don't think that's a problem. I don't think him taking the back seat for a year or two is an issue. I'm not worried about it too much. He's going to be really important for his defense alone and doing more of the small things offensively. So they're going to need the best version of VJ every night, even if that's scoring 10 points and getting 3 steals and rebounding and being a connector.
I mean, look, the guy averaged really what well. Yeah, I was about to say the guy averaged six rebounds and five assists as a rookie. He has so many other things that he can do so good. It's just going to be like, let's just let him cook a little, let keep him in the oven a little bit longer. That's it. You don't want to have that inefficient rookie sophomore slump that happens to some guys and ruins them. I think this is a really good thing for him. But
I mean,
we'll see.
He's still going to learn from Maxi. He's going to have LeBron and Jaylen Brown in there now. Like, he's going to have a ton of guys he can pick up things from. I think this could be really good for him, like you said. So I'm not really subscribing to the VJ panic agenda. I don't think that's really Sixers fans. I think that's non-Sixers fans, like, trying to find reasons to nitpick why this is bad. So
yeah.
I'm not worried about VJ. The most interesting question, of course, Lucas, is what does Embiid's role look like?
Embiid
has pretty much been the guy when he's on the floor his entire Sixers career. Even last season, they ran a good bit of the offense through him when he was out there. This is going to be by far the most talented supporting cast he has played with. Jaylen Brown is a very high usage guy. That's really his main selling point, is that you just pour a lot of the offense into him. Maxey, you went on the ball still a little bit just because he's that caliber of player. LeBron is going to be setting the table. He's going to be bringing the ball up and initiating the offense a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like, what does Embiid's role look like in your opinion?
So, this is not me saying that Joel Embiid can't do what he's been doing this whole entire time. I want to be absolutely clear. I think Joel Embiid can still be a monster. And, you know, without him, we don't win that Celtics series. And without us winning that Celtics series, we probably don't get Jaylen Brown. Let's call that what it is, right? That being said, you know, like I said earlier, it depends on the matchup. Like, right, if Joel Embiid gets to play against, like, say, Vucevic, we're feeding Joel the ball, right? Like, but I don't think Joel should be first or second on the pecking order. Probably third, if we're being honest here. Third. Depending on the night, sometimes fourth or fifth, right? I think that if you want Joel to, if this team wants to succeed, I think first off, you need to cap his minutes at 30 per game, right? Somewhere between 28 and 30. If you feel comfortable with the centers, I mean, you probably don't. Then you want to, on top of that, with Joel, I think. Look, Joel, he's going to get open looks. He's still a bucket for mid-range. And I was thinking about this because I'm writing an article for Fansite about, like, you know, ranking the new ranking of LeBron's best top 10 teammates. And, you know, you look at the big men that LeBron's played with. They usually fit into one or two archetypes. They become a finisher, lob finisher at the rim, or they become a stretch three, right? A stretch five, right? Joel used to be a stretch five, right? The last two seasons, he's shot, you know, well below his career averages from 3-point land. Can Joel reclaim that and become a stretch five again? I don't know. We know that he's money from the elbow, right? That's his money. I think this really depends on one, how healthy Joel is. And I saw a rumor. This is a rumor that he had like 15 pounds of pure muscle. I don't think that's real.
That was
a parody account. Okay, thank you. So anyway, ignore that. But like, if he can get back to shooting, let's say 35% from three, let's just say he can get back to that, right? Become a stretch five. And then play defense. Like get back. I don't know if he can ever get quite back to his prime when he was all defensive team. But if he can, or get close to that level. Look, a lot of defensive issues that you brought up earlier becomes a moot point. I think the goal for Joel Embiid this year is to be an all-defensive player. Like, if I'm telling people what their role is, Joel's role is to be an all-defensive player. We know what he can do on offense. We know he can take over on any given night. But what the team needs from him this year is all defense. We don't even need the playmaking, as I said earlier in the offseason, because you got LeBron now, right? Like, you don't need to run the offense through Joel at the elbow. Joel, rediscover your three-point shot and rediscover your rim protection and rebounding. That is what the Sixers need from you right now. You basically need to be a supercharged Miles Turner.
Yeah, and I mean, we've mentioned this before. I do think Karl-Anthony Towns gave him a pretty good blueprint in the playoffs as far as like how a very talented and skilled offensive center can sacrifice and use his gravity to benefit in that case, like Jalen Brunson, a very specific, like heliocentric star on the perimeter. It's going to be a little more complicated in Philly with like three guys who can theoretically be doing that every night.
Yeah. But I was about to say, like, you have LeBron initiating the offense. You don't want LeBron off the ball too much in the offense run through Joel.
Yeah. I mean, look, you want LeBron off the ball a little bit. I still think you want Joel like playmaking and doing things. He's going to have to really buy into being like,
the rim
hard and makes very decisive moves and doesn't kind of pause and hesitate at the elbow as much.
I think a 18 to 20 point per game Joel is what we need next year. If we can get 10 rebounds and 1.5 blocks per game. Yeah. We might not even need 18 points, to be honest.
Really, like, ironically, he's probably going to just have to lean into being more of a scorer and less of a hub. So he's going to need to be a finisher. Joel has never been someone who, like, rolls to the rim super hard and plays that style of basketball. If he can lean into that a little bit and make those kinds of sacrifices, I think this will
look... I just think he's not a finisher. That's why I said rediscover your three-point shot. Become a high-volume three-point shooter.
Well, it's not that he can't finish. It's not like he's a poor finisher.
I'm not saying that he can't. It's just not. It's not his game. He's never. Even when he had James Harden, he got the MVP season. That's not his game. It was still the mid roll. It's like the mid post roll.
And that's fine. He can do the mid range pull ups too. That's
obviously. That's
not like a bad.
It's a money shot, honestly.
But yeah, he's going to need to focus more energy on defense. He's going to need to be willing to kind of let things flow through him instead of flowing into him. It's going to take sacrifice, again, on everyone's part, and that's going to be the big storyline here is can everyone buy into this? But I think Joel has reached the point in his career where he is willing to take a back seat when he has guys like Maxey and Brown and LeBron who he just knows he can trust. They kind of do things. I think LeBron or Embiid has really been waiting for this kind of situation where he doesn't feel like he has to do everything. So,
yeah,
I frankly think he might be excited about that.
Should be.
As far as like health, obviously Embiid, you said you want to cap the minutes at 30, which I think is understandable. I think really you might want a similar setup with LeBron.
Years.
Those are two guys, again, who the offense is really going to flow through one of them for the most part, and JB and Maxey in different ways. But
yeah,
do you think they can kind of help each other as far as managing minutes, managing workload, and maybe LeBron and Embiid can both be healthier because they're on the same team now?
I would hope so. So let's just say you play them both. Let's just say, for kicks and giggles, you have Dean Wade sub in for both of them, okay? Let's say Dean Wade subs in for either one or the other, right? You switch LeBron to the five. I don't know if you really want to do that, but let's just say you play them both for 30 minutes a game. You stagger them after the first, like, 6 minutes of each beginning of each half, right? And then, like, you have Dean Wade play basically from the six-minute mark of the first quarter to the six-minute mark of the second quarter. You could make it work that way, I suppose, if you wanted to go that route. And just kind of, like, change them out every 3 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes, I guess, if you want to go that route. Try to preserve them that way.
So, if we're, like, trying to split up the minutes and figure out, like, which pairings work the best.
Well, we know Tyrese and Joel does work.
So, yeah, are you thinking it's like Joel and Tyrese and then JB and LeBron?
I think the only
issue with that is they don't have a ton of wing depth at the moment. So, you know,
I think they go small with the two guards.
But who's playing the three and the four in those lineups?
Okay, the three and the four, Dean Wade and Edwards. I mean, that's pretty much your only option. Or you could go Dean at the three and Dom at the four.
So that's where it's like, maybe do you
Or you can put VJ down at the three and bring Anthony Simons in at the two?
I think maybe in those, you can maybe talk yourself into it being more of a LeBron and Maxi stagger, where you're putting a rim finishing big like Bona or a 40 next to LeBron, which that's how you're going to maximize those guys' minutes. Like, I don't want a 40 and Bona playing a ton of minutes without LeBron if I don't have to.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then, you know, you let JB and Joel occupy very similar areas of the floor, even LeBron to an extent, but I think you can figure out a nice little two-man dance with Embiid.
Well, the cool thing is, because you have four guys, or five guys if you want to count VJ, you can do a lot of interchangeable
switch. They're going to have to experiment. Like, this is not going to be a set thing in game one. Mm-hmm. They're going to be mixing and matching all season.
I mean, we could get spicy and get LeBron and Joel, and then get Tyrese and, JB.
Yeah, and look, I think they all work on some level, like, with how talented they are. Like, there's mm-hmm. not a bad combo there. And when all four are together, it's going to be very hard to guard them. I do think Joel and LeBron are your best, like, facilitating.
Your best hubs.
Those are the guys you run things through, who can attract guys in the middle of the floor and facilitate and set the table. Maxi doesn't turn the ball over, and he's a very talented scorer, but he's done his best work by far off the ball, attacking closeouts. You mm-hmm. don't really, and JB, like, the turnovers are a problem with him. He's a very good ISO scorer. He can get to the rim. Those are all very valuable traits, but he can kind of become a bit of a black hole at times. So maybe that's how you want to break it up, where, like, Embiid and Maxi again, and LeBron and JB, you keep one of those guys who can kind of run the offense through more productively and more efficiently, to kind of help Maxi and Brown be in their spots and be put in a position to score without having to, you know, do everything themselves.
Well, okay, so if you're doing it that way, then you want to have if you're always trying to have shooters around those two guys, right? Then Anthony Simons, Dean Wade, and probably Filon or Edwards, you know, depending on the lineup, right? Those would be your four to five guys that you would say, okay, these are the guys that are going to, because you want to have shooting, right? So you can't bring out Dom. Jabari's not consistent enough. I think that's, you know, like with Joel, you definitely want to do Dean Wade. Let's say Joel and Maxi, right? You want to do Dean Wade, Simons, VJ, or you could do, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Dean Wade is going to need to play, like,
28 minutes a game.
25 plus minutes. Like,
yeah.
You're going to want Dean Wade in pretty much any lineup that doesn't include all five guys. Like,
yeah.
You're going to really need his defense and, like, his ability to rebound and just do all the dirty work. Like, the fact that he doesn't need to touch the ball a lot on offense is going to be important for a team where everyone else wants to touch the ball. So,
yeah.
Dean Wade's going to be a big, big factor. He's going to be the clear cut, like, quote unquote, sixth man on this team, I think.
Yeah.
Simons is going to get plenty of minutes just because he's the more established guy in the backcourt. Filon, I worry about Simons and Filon guarding together because they're so skinny, and there's just going to be a weight deficit there that I'm a little dubious of. Filon was a very good defender at Alabama as a freshman. He took on more minutes and more of an offensive load this year and kind of slacked off on that end, which is understandable. Obviously, he's going to be mirroring that freshman role a little bit more this year when he does see the floor.
Yeah.
So maybe the defense perks up, but I don't think you can count on him to be, like, a big stopper on the perimeter. I think he's going to be more of an off-ball guy, like, creating steals and turning it over and getting out on the break. So, like, defensively, the backcourt is just going to be a problem. There's really no way around it, but you're going to want Dean Wade on the floor a lot. If Justin Edwards can make a defensive leap, that would be great. He really hasn't shown much of anything on that end so far in his career, I don't want to, like, bank on that. I do think, like, Jabari Walker and Dom Barlow are very good defenders and rebounders and great work guys. If they could do a lick of anything else on offense, that'd be really nice. Like, We know the Bona-Barlow combo doesn't really work because there's just not enough there between them offensively. It'll be the same with Okporty and however they want to mix up those center minutes. So I think Barlow is the guy you want to kind of tie at the hip to Embiid. Those were always the lineups he was best in last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're putting Okporty out there or Bona, you're going to have Wade at the four and you're going to try to put, you know, enough size and shooting and defense around them. But,
well, okay, just humor me for a minute, okay? You know, we talk about this team still needs defense. I know this isn't on the agenda, but I want to just talk about, like, we do have three non-guaranteed contracts that we could move off of. So there are some free agents. Let's talk about the best defensive options here. The one at the top of the list here is Ochai Agbaji, good 3-and-D guy.
Sure.
Does that make sense? Like, right? He's a wing. He's like 6'6", solid. Let's see here. Your guy, Killian Hayes. I mean, technically, if you don't want shooting, you want defense. Is Andre Jackson a good defender? Or can he not shoot?
Yeah, I mean, he can't shoot.
Okay.
But, yeah. I mean, I'd be interested in Andre Jackson because he's a super cool athlete and a good defender and a really good passer and can kind of do, like, some extremely, extremely light Draymond stuff. I'm not comparing him to Draymond, but that's kind of a, you know, he can do some of those kind of connective things on offense.
Gosh, there is not that many defenders left on agent.
There are no good free agents left. Like, Killian Hayes, much love and respect. We don't need another guard. He's not going to play on this team. So,
let's see here.
I mean, and the thing is, like, Jabari Walker, Bona, they're not going to waive Bona. Jabari Walker is a good, like, a valuable defender in theory and makes sense on this team. They still need, like, that size and versatility. So I don't think they just move on with some of the guys that are available at this point.
I mean, there's Jeremy Shoham, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't think that's like an upgrade over Jabari Walker. You know what I mean? It's kind of, you're replacing it's apple to apple. Like, it's the same thing. You're just not really upgrading there.
Yeah, there's really not any good defenders left because Matisse Thybulle signed with the Lakers. Good for him. Unless you want to bring in Gary Payton III, but I feel like he's kind of a little bit past his prime now.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think the Sixers are going to do much of anything.
Unless somebody gets bought out. I mean,
this is pretty much the roster.
Yeah.
We'll do a ranking the Sixers maybe next week. That'll be our next podcast.
I'm not going to be available next week unless we do it Monday.
Our next episode, we'll rank the Sixers and we'll talk through all of this in even more depth. But this is pretty much the roster. It's a very talented and very top heavy and very flawed roster.
It's solid. Look, there are moves to be made. There are going to be guys that we're going to look at. We just got to see what happens, man. Like I said,
deadline is going to be important. If they can pick up one or two, like, solid 3-and-D wing types at the deadline, we're all going to feel a whole lot better.
I saw that rumor about KCP. I mean, I know that, like, what did he even do last year? Let me check.
Yeah, like, he was quite bad last year. I am open to, like, maybe experimenting with KCP over Edwards. That could be an upgrade. I think Philly is a good spot for someone like that who's mostly just going to chuck threes and defend. But I just don't think they're going to get a needle moving guy at this point. I think they've put all their cards on the table. They got
last year was 8.5 points per game, 31% shooting from three.
Yeah.
Defense wise, advanced metrics say that he was let's see, per 100 possessions, he was pretty awful. Okay, yeah. And then advanced box plus minus defensive, -0.2. So actually, not terrible defensively, but not good. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got to wait and see, man. Look, some bad team is going to get rid of the defender because they won't need more offense, and that's where the Sixers got to have the strike.
For over 70 years, Sports Illustrated has set the standard for sports storytelling. Now's your chance to be part of it. Subscribe to the magazine today at si.com/SIPodOffer and experience the game like never before.
Yeah, they'll figure something out. I'm pretty comfortable and confident that Gansey, unlike if there was a big knock on Morey, it's that his deadline moves were just very minimal to non-existent. He didn't really do much to improve this team midseason. I get the sense that Gansey is going to be more aggressive on that front, which I'm excited about.
And there's going to be more players wanting to come here.
That's true. Guys want to play with LeBron. That's another pretty significant factor, especially on the buyout market. A lot more buyout guys are going to be very realistic targets for the Sixers now. So whether anyone good enough and who fits our needs is spot out, it's a different question.
And we can finally put the Ben Simmons stuff to rest.
Yeah. So Dwight Howard says that we should bring Ben back. So
No, Dwight. We're not bringing you back. We're not bringing him back.
Clutch client Ben Simmons. There's a
very No. Clutch does not represent him anymore.
Okay, well, Rich Paul is still talking about him, so...
When did Rich Paul talk about him? When did Rich Paul talk about him recently?
There's been plenty of clips about Rich Paul. I couldn't speak.
Fine, send them to me later.
All right, let's finish up, Lucas, by doing collaborative Eastern Conference power rankings. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to try to come to some sort of consensus here, okay?
Okay.
This is very difficult because the East has a lot of good teams. We're going to operate under the assumption that Kawhi Leonard is a Toronto Raptor.
Yeah, sure. We're
going to assume that's the case.
Yeah.
We want to start at the bottom and work our way up.
Let's start at the bottom.
Okay, I'm going to submit the Bucks at 15.
That's fine. I don't even think there's any real competition there, is there?
I don't think so, really.
No, because everybody else besides the Bucks are trying to win. Literally everybody else besides the Bucks are trying to win.
I would submit the Bulls at 14.
Are we sure we want to do the Bulls at 14?
I am, yeah.
Counter argument, the Nets.
Nets have Randall and MPJ and a great coach. Not that he's a bad coach. I like Caleb Wilson a lot, but Bulls are very young, and they're really at the very beginning stages of like a rebuild. Finally,
okay, so fine.
I'm going to submit Bulls at 14. I think the Nets pretty comfortably outperformed expectations last year, even though they were a bad team. There's no reason to outwardly tank this year because they don't have their pick, and because of the lottery. So I'm comfortable putting the Nets at 13, but I could see them being kind of a sneaky play-in team.
They could be, but this is pretty much from 13 on. It's a dogfight, honestly. It's a dogfight. So 12. I think
12 is Washington.
Yeah, just because you can't trust AD to be healthy, right?
Or Trey, and otherwise they're very young.
If you could promise me 65 games from both of those guys, they're easily a play-in team, but I just can't do that right now. Yeah,
and like you said, there are just so many good teams in the East. Like, there are 13 to 14 play-in quality teams. So,
yeah,
I think until we see it come together in Washington, we just kind of have to put them there by default.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think I put Charlotte at 11 when I did this the other day.
I think I put Orlando.
Orlando almost beat the one seed in the playoffs.
Okay, that's
Charlotte. Charlotte traded their like lifeblood offensively.
You think so? You don't think that they're gonna? Okay, so you think they're gonna? Okay, so you think they're gonna take a step back? Okay, I mean, I'll take it. Yeah, I'll do that.
So important to that team.
I get that, but like culture wise, like, first off, you wanted to get out of the LaMelo Ball deal. You got him. You sold him at his peak value, right? First off, you said yourself that you love Naz Reid being a guy there, right? Okay, so let's talk about that. Colin Knuppel, until like the last five games of the regular season, was looking like easily the rookie of the year, right? And then during the playoffs, he kind of crapped the bed. But let's be real, most rookies crap the bed in the playoffs. So, like, I'm not mad about that. I like Coby White in that system. Like, I guess it depends on how big of a leap you think Brandon Miller and Colin Knuppel can take.
I think all those guys benefited from LaMelo. Like, I don't think Con is going to have it quite as easy without LaMelo there. Like,
okay, we can do them at 11. That's
they're
fine.
They're not like without talent, but I think Charlotte at 11 feels right to me.
Okay,
10 is where it really gets tricky. Are we just doing the Magic at 10?
Part of me wants to say Toronto.
With Kawhi?
Do we honestly think Kawhi is going to be healthy like he was last year again for the majority of games?
Not, they were already a top five team without him. Like,
they were top five defensive team without him.
They were top five seed. They were the number five seed, Lucas. Kawhi's coming off his best season yet. And he's so much better than Brandon Ingram. It's not even remotely close. And if you're a top five defensive team, you're probably not the nine seed.
Yeah. Talent-wise,
I had Toronto in the top four, like, with a bullet. I'm not putting them at nine. It's not going to happen. Or 10.
Can I talk you into the Boston Celtics?
Let me look up what I sent out. All right.
Because, like,
I had Atlanta at nine.
Okay.
But I can understand.
I'll put Orlando at 10. That's fine. But, like, I actually, no. You know what? No, I... Orlando at 10, Boston at 9, Atlanta at 8. That's how I see it.
Boston just won 56 games, Lucas, and they have Tatum now. Like,
yeah, but like, first off, is Tatum really going to be able to stay healthy for a full season? I mean, he played what, like, basically 3 weeks, and then he re-aggravated that Achilles. Like, let's talk about that.
Anyone can get hurt. Like,
I just,
they have Tatum and Paul George. They have one of the best coaches in the league, and they have a very bankable regular season style that consistently produces wins. I think we're kind of kidding ourselves if we think Boston's going to be a playing team, unless like catastrophic things happen injury wise.
I mean, what, Paul George played 45 games this past year.
They're better on paper than they were a year ago. They improved their rebounding in a rotation. Tatum is better than Brown, and they're going to have Paul George when they didn't have a second guy for most of last season. I think putting them at nine would be crazy.
Look,
Atlanta was very fun.
Look, I just think they get Jalen Johnson takes another year of development. He gets better. CJ McCollum, when he was playing, they were like, what, 19-2 or whatever when he was starting, right? Like, you get a full season of that now. You get a full season of realized Nikhil Alexander Walker. You get Dyson Daniels. You get the Dorcher Chamber now coming off the bench. I almost cussed there. I didn't want to, but like, you have him coming off the bench. Their only weakness is center. And even Okongwu is not bad. He's just not.
I agree. Great. The Hawks are good, but we're talking about a bunch of teams with like finals aspirations. Like,
I'm saying that I think the Hawks should have finalist aspirations.
They should, but realistically, I just don't see how you can put them over any of these other teams. Except maybe Indiana, just on the basis of not being sure about Halliburton. But I think the Pacers' ceiling is significantly higher. So, I especially don't see it with Boston. If you want to put Cleveland here, if you want to submit Cleveland at 9...
I will put Cleveland there, yes. I think Cleveland takes a step back.
I can at least get there, but I think the Hawks should be 8.
That's fine.
Okay. Are we just going to put the Pacers at 7 as kind of a TBD situation?
Hot take. I think the Pacers might be better than the Heat. in year one. In year one. Not saying that, like, they're obviously that he has more top end talent, but like the Heat's depth is my problem here.
That's fair. I mean, I think if Indiana gets back to where they were before the Haliburton injury, they would be a better team than Miami.
So
Giannis has the health stuff. If you want to put the Heat
in the funk, yeah, I'll put the Heat at seven. It would be funny for, you know, Giannis to go from one playing team to another too. Okay. I need that in my life.
So Pacers at seven.
Yeah.
All right, we're in the top five now. That leaves us with New York, Toronto, Philly, Boston, and Detroit.
I'm going to put Toronto at five. Oh, you're putting the Pistons at five. Well, yeah, they did lose some. Yeah, that's fine. Pistons at five, I can accept that. Toronto at four.
You were just saying Boston at nine. I can't get you to put Boston at four.
Boston at four. Boston has less depth than Toronto.
Okay.
Toronto at three.
Okay. I'll accept that. That leaves us with the Knicks and the Sixers. I know we're a Sixers.
Are we going to be homers or are we going to be objective here?
I still feel like the Knicks have earned this by default.
I think you won the championship, you get to be number one because you barely broke up your team.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the real question is, like, can they survive the loss of Mitch Robinson with the replacement of Andre Drummond? Obviously, that's a downgrade.
Yeah, as we know well. Like, there are definitely questions about the Knicks, and if recent history has taught us anything, it's that going back-to-back is not easy. So I can get the case for any of the top four teams here at one. I think there's a really strong Raptors case that you're kind of dismissing. I think Boston is still going to be there in the conversation, though. I do think the playoffs kind of outlines
the trade goes through. Like, one, I just feel like they're gonna, like, Kawhi's gonna get some type of suspension, or else they wouldn't be dragging it on like this, right?
Maybe number two, we don't know that.
And then number two, like, how old is Kawhi Leonard now?
He's old, but, like, again, he's coming off his best season. Like, I understand, like, the age and injury concerns. He's 35.
35. Like,
but he was so good last year. Like, insanely good.
On a team that didn't do anything.
Sure, but he's on a team that did do something now and has a much better roster and a very young roster full of quality defenders and guys who will guard and do the little things. I think Scotty and CMB and Kawhi is going to be a freaky defensive trio. They're going to have Quickly this year. They're going to have RJ. They're a very good team on paper. I think, like, if he gets suspended, that obviously changes things. If Kawhi gets hurt, that's always a concern. But,
well, what if they decide
Boston does, like you just said, Detroit, Cleveland, Miami has injury concerns.
I mean, technically, the only team that doesn't have, like, major injury concerns out of the top, like, Knicks don't really have injury concerns.
Yeah.
Don't really.
OG has some stuff. It's really Detroit. Detroit was the one seed. They have, like, the most durable. I mean, Cade has been hurt, though. Like, everyone has been hurt. Everyone gets hurt. That's like the league we're in now, Lucas. Guys are just worn down. So I don't know how much we can factor in injury concerns when all these teams.
So are you surprised that we brought Cleveland out of the top, like, you know, playoff team and into the play-in, like, middle of the pack play-in? Because, like, they're bringing back James Harden. Like, I don't think they're losing anybody else. So, like, why do we have them so much lower? Do we just not believe in them anymore?
I think we're probably projecting towards the playoffs, which sounds weird since they just made the conference finals, but so many teams have improved around them. While I think Cleveland has just kind of tread water a bit, I think they kind of lucked into a very easy path. Yeah. They still struggled with like a very vulnerable Pistons team that clearly was not built for the playoffs and just got weaker now. So,
and Toronto, if they didn't lose two of their starting five players, they probably would have won that series as well.
Being very generous, putting the Pistons at five even. So,
yeah,
I
honestly, you could have the Pistons because they lost several role players, important role players.
The Pistons below the Pacers and the Heat, at least.
I would say I would be tempted to put the Pistons below the Hawks.
Okay.
Because like, they just don't have depth anymore. They lost a lot of their depth.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens with Jalen Duren. He's probably going to re-sign on some.
But like, is it going to be? Yeah, like
payoff, but.
But to be clear, 10 through 13 could all make the play-in. I could see a world where... Yeah, I mean, even if there's a weird world where the Bulls get spicy and make a run at the play-in. Now, yeah, they shouldn't, but they could.
I struggle to see it with Chicago just because of how good the teams in front of them are.
I just like the starting Josh Giddey as a point forward. You got Norman Powell scoring a lot of points. Caleb Wilson looks really stinking good. Luzelis has another year, and he's training with Denny Advia or wants to train with Denny. And like Summer Nick Claxton is a quality center.
Summer League historically has like zero correlation on the regular season. I like Caleb Wilson a lot. I don't know if he can play the style he played in Summer League and be a great, great rookie. I think he will be a good rookie. I think he'll make an impact. I don't think he's going to take all the shots he took in Summer League. But Caleb is probably the least, quote-unquote, ready of the top four. I think Buzelis and Caleb are going to have to figure out how to play together.
Yeah, that's going to be tricky because I see them both as fours and not... Yeah, that's going to be tricky.
Yeah, they just don't have a ton of like proven depth either, so...
They might have to end up trading Buzelis in the long run. We'll see.
Very possible. We'll see what happens with Asenge. He didn't do much in Summer League, unfortunately, but
he also grew like to a, like 7 foot. He apparently grew to 7 foot as well. So
yeah,
like,
I'm still holding out hope on Asenge Island. But
yeah, the Bucks are the only team that we know is not trying to win.
Yeah, I don't think the Bulls are realistically trying to win. The Bucks are just going to be god awful and horrible to watch, unfortunately. The Brandon Burries is very good in Summer League, so that gives them something to hope for, at least. Mm-hmm. Nets, I really like Jordy Fernandez. I think Julius Randle and Michael Porter can still win you some games. So obviously I'm not like the highest in the world.
Well, Devin looked good in the Summer League. That's the and Mikael Brown Devin had his moments. Good.
I like Mikael Brown. It's tough for rookie point
guard. Who's going to play center?
It's going to be De'Ron Sharpe, which
that's rough. But that's rough.
Nets aren't going to make the playoffs realistically. Washington would love to make the playoffs. They're clearly trying to.
Can they be healthy enough to do it? Because, I mean, if you get 65 games out of both of those guys, you're probably going to get a high-level play-in spot, like 8 or 7.
I mean, this whole thing about Trey, like, buying into a lesser role and being the distributor, that's great in theory, but Trey has been such a ball-dominant guy. He's always been, like, the fulcrum, so...
Look, if you can get, like, can do 16 points and 12 assists from him, I think that's a win.
Yeah, and look, Trey's still very talented. I can see a world where the Wizards are a playing team. 100%.
Yeah. But Hornets, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Burden of proof. We just have to.
Magic, I think if the Magic, they do have a new head coach. Hopefully that they revitalize the offense. If they can figure out the offensive end, they're going to be a top six team.
Yeah. I think this whole top 10, you can like chart out how they would be a top four seed.
Yeah,
pretty easily. Like, there's some level of reasonable optimism with all 10 of those teams. The Cavs at 9 were just in the conference finals. The Pistons at 8 were the number one seed. Like, you can see the vision for all those teams. So,
yeah,
the East is going to be a real bloodbath this year, which I'm looking forward to. I guess I don't know if I'm really looking forward to it, but At least the Sixers are kind of at the top of that conversation now, which is
absolutely. I mean, look, yeah, get your Sixers gear. You know, this guy got LeBron to Philly, and you know, LeBron jerseys are almost sold out already online.
We really don't like Maxey is such a gem. He deserves the world. Yeah. LeBron is a Sixer, guys. LeBron and Jaylen Brown are Philadelphia 76ers, which is...
With Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, MVJ, come.
Craziest thing that's ever happened.
So let me ask you this before we wrap up. Who do you give more credit to the offseason for? Do you give it to Mike Gansey or do you give it to Bob Myers?
Seems like Gansey's the guy there. I don't know. I know Bob Myers went on Rich Paul's podcast.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
I think it's Gansey. I assume Gansey. It seems like Bob wanted to take a pretty hands off approach, but it's definitely a collective effort there.
Oh yeah.
And as someone who has not expressed much optimism about Bob Myers' involvement in the team, I got to give him some credit for making it happen. That's the one thing he does is he gets guys to come to their team. So they've made Philly a destination, which was not an easy thing to do. So I give both of them a lot of credit.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Yeah, I was going to say, let's wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up. As always, everyone, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Sixers Sense podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow along if you can. We are on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Sixers Sense. I'm at KleinNBA. He is at CoachJ_20. We are also on TikTok at The Sixers Sense. And until next time, go Sixers. We'll have some more LeBron talk in the future. Can't believe this is my life. Peace out, guys.
Trust the process. LeBron made his decision, and now we have the franchise.
Throw the ball up. Process is back the F on, etc., etc.
VJ Max. Yeah.